Student suffering from food poisoning after eating at a Chipotle restaurant near campus has risen to 120. They say the symptoms are consistent with norovirus. I'm Chaz Henry. One of the allegations prosecutors are making at the trial of a Baltimore police officer they say is partially responsible for the death in custody of 25-year-old Freddie Gray is that Officer William Porter didn't get Gray medical help after he suffered a spinal injury while being transported in a police van. Correspondent Miguel Marquez.
On the question of whether or not he heard Mr. Gray say he couldn't breathe, Officer Porter explained that to the jury, that he only heard that as Mr. Gray was yelling at the very first incident, at the very first stop.
Unless Congress takes action this week, the federal government will run out of money at week's end. White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest discouraging lawmakers from trying to put what he called ideological poison pills into budget legislation.
The American people were quite clear that that was something they didn't approve of. And it didn't prove to be a particularly effective strategy for Republicans in the past. And I'm hopeful before we reach the deadline that Republicans will abandon that strategy.
Right now, the Dow is down 84, S&P down 16. I'm Chaz Henry.
Alternative Talk 1150 KKNW is an equal opportunity employer. If you're looking for a career in radio broadcasting, check out the current job opportunities on our website, 1150kknw.com. Click on About Us, then click on the EEO link. If your group or organization would like to be notified of job openings, please send your contact information to jobs, Hubbard Radio Seattle, 3650 131st Avenue Southeast, Suite 550, Bellevue, Washington, 98006, or email seattlejobs at hubbardradio.com.
Good afternoon, Eric Ryder here with you on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m. Time now for a quick look at our weather outlook. We expect more rain this afternoon, off and on showers for a Thursday. Rainy as well, with highs around 49, lows around 43. Breezy at times as well. Friday, showers and some breaks again, with highs around 48, lows around 43. Saturday, rain returning, with highs around 46.
Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KLCK FM 98.9 Digital HD3 Seattle.
Welcome to the Dog Show with Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk AM 1150 on this fine, now sunny day. Boy, we sure had quite the storm last night. Did you get thunder, Eric?
Yeah, no, I didn't get thunder, but boy, sure a lot of rain and wind, and oh my gosh, that kept me up.
We got like a huge clap of thunder, and I was thinking, and I swear, in the middle of the night, I think I must have been half awake because I'm just remembering this now as I'm talking to you. Maybe I was dreaming it, but I was like, you know how we always say every week, pretty much regardless of what the weather is, because it's so mild here in Seattle, what a great day it is to take your dog for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great time to take your dog for a walk in that mess last night.
Yeah,
oh,
not last
goodness.
Night, but hey, look, we've got a window of sunshine right now.
Beautiful.
So if you happen to have a few minutes,
get out
this would be a great time to take your dog for a walk.
And there's lots of debris everywhere from all the wind for them to smell.
That's right. Yeah, they'll have a great time hopping over branches and stuff.
Yeah. Well, have a great interview today. Another author interview, and I've been like an author interview machine this last week. I've interviewed three. And this is our third of three. Now, one of them was a pre-recorded interview with Dr. Bernie Siegel that I will be airing later this month, so you can look forward to that. But today I have with us on the line Grant Hayter Menzies, who is the author of a book titled From Stray Dog to World War One Hero, The Paris Terrier Who Joined the First Division, and it is the story of Rags, the World War One hero. Grant, welcome to the Dog Show.
Thank you.
So, you know, it's funny. You seem to, you've written a number of other books as well, and they seem sort of, stories from history. So it seems like you have an interest in history. And as an adult, I think back of when I was young and in school, in college and high school especially, that I history was not, when I was in high school, not a subject that I was really interested in. I don't know. I couldn't focus on it. I didn't really, like, care much about it. But now I'm like, I love learning about history in general. And so one of the cool things about this book, in addition to sharing Rags' story, which we'll talk about, but is also just learning about the history of, you know, of this time and of this war and what it was like for these soldiers out there and all that stuff. So I really appreciate that aspect of it as well.
Wonderful.
So will you just, so this, I had, don't know, if I had heard of Rags, it was sort of a vague recollection of this story. I'm certainly familiar with him now after reading most of the book. But what, and there had been a book sort of written about him before, but it was a while ago, and it sounded like it was maybe incomplete or something. So I'd love to hear, just from your perspective as an author, what inspired you, motivated you to write this book and to sort of tell the story again?
Well, the motivating force was really my rescue dog, Freddie. We adopted him in 2010 from the BCSBCA here in Victoria, BC. And he had come out of a puppy mill situation. He'd probably been born there and lived there the first year of his life,
mm-hmm.
and was an absolute nervous wreck, was a physical wreck, a dog probably just a little bit smaller than Rags. He's a Spitz, a large Pomeranian. Mm-hmm. And it took him a few months and then a few years to really come to the point where he trusted people, trusted us. Watching this transformation from a really a terrified waif to a confident little dog who was happy and trusting,
mm-hmm.
Was so inspiring to me. I thought I'd really love to write about a dog. And so I was looking through different historical records. As you mentioned, I've written several books.
Mm-hmm.
They've all been about women.
Mm-hmm.
They've been about women, extraordinary women, who, for whatever reason, didn't receive their due in the public eye,
mm-hmm.
And have been forgotten for whatever reason. And I felt they should be celebrated again. And so this was quite a challenge for me. But I found a book by Major Jack Rohan from 1930 called Rags, The Dog Who Went to War. And it was written for young adults. It was written in a rather artless style, but it was full of data,
mm-hmm.
that just as an exercise I was able to correlate with known events from World War I. And it told Bragg's story, obviously, up until 1930. So I did a little more digging, and I found that he'd had this a whole life after that. He'd actually lived to be 20 years old and died in 1936. So it was just a combination of factors. And finding the descendants of Rags' guardians, the descendants of one of the soldiers who rescued him and descendants of the officer who adopted him, and finding that they had been keeping archives for many years, almost 100 years,
mm-hmm.
that they were willing to share with me for research purposes,
wow.
and photographs and all kinds of things. So, yeah, that really, this is why I dedicate the book to my dog, Freddie. But it really, it got its start with finding Jack Rohan's book and realizing that there was so much more to the story.
Mm.
So, yeah, it kind of proceeded from there. And it kind of surprises me, actually, that I was able to do what I did.
Yeah, lots of organizing of information and piecing together and researching, yeah. And I can really appreciate what it took for you to put this together in a way that's really very well written. I mean, I've been able to, it's loaded. It's a jam-packed book. I mean, it's loaded with story and fact, and it's done very well. I mean, it was really easy to follow, and then, you know, sort of as you lay the foundation and we sort of get to know, you sort of set the scene, and then we follow, we get to know Rags and Donovan, his war partner, the human part.
Yeah.
And all the incredible things that those two accomplished together and, over and over and over again. I mean, that in and of itself is miraculous, as you're really describing. You mentioned the movie War Horse, which I saw, which really sort of illuminated the world of animals. And you sort of expand on that, animals and war, and how in this war, people were, I mean, there's aspects of it that are kind of hard to be with, and you kind of talk about that, where you're
it wasn't easy to write.
Yeah.
I have a very soft spot for all animals. I was brought up, as I mentioned in the acknowledgments, I was brought up in a family that had memories of dogs that had died 100 years earlier. They were all considered members of the family, and you remembered them just as you would, a favorite grandfather or whatever. And it was difficult reading the accounts of what messenger dogs endured during the Great War. They were all on the British, German, and French sides. The Americans didn't have a dog program, and that's what made Rags Sergeant Donovan's secret weapon, as I call him, because there weren't many messenger dogs in use. I don't think they were even authorized on the American side, but on all the others, they had been in use by the Germans before the British. But I also wanted to use the opportunity to tell some of the stories that I found in these books that were published in the 1920s about some of those messenger dogs.
Mm-hmm.
There's the little Pomeranian. No one would ever imagine a Pomeranian being used on a battlefield. And it's horrifying to me to even think of it. But there was a little Pomeranian, a little black fellow, probably about 15 pounds, whose name was Little Jim. And he was trained and used to carry messages across some of the worst terrain that you can imagine.
Will you just tell us, for those who are listening who maybe aren't quite exactly sure what we mean by messenger dogs?
Sure. They were trained on the British side and the Germans, French, to carry around their neck on a collar a little canister that would put a note that gave information to artillery to let off fire at a certain sector or whatever. And they were certainly safer to use and faster, dogs were, than people. The Americans had runners, human runners, and the Canadians did as well. And it wasn't a job that you survived for very long.
No.
You ultimately ended up either shot or wounded badly.
Yeah.
And there were some that actually survived the entire course of the war, which has to be one of the luckiest. I mean, you're basically running in full view of guns, and if you make it, you make it. Rags had a gift, you might say, for finding these men. He wasn't trained to be what the French called a chien sanitaire, to actually go out and look for either corpses or wounded. But he had a knack for finding these men and bringing Donovan back with him to where they were lying, and he would take the note off of the man that they were usually pinned to their battle blouse. And many times, as I point out in the book, Rags was responsible for saving the lives of who knows how many men who were trapped, and that note needed to get through to the artillery to break them out.
Right.
So, but these dogs, as I've mentioned, this was not an American program. So even just to have Rags in the trenches it meant that there were a number of agreements with a number of officers. And I think once Rags was acknowledged as the mascot of the division, the first division, everybody just did whatever they could to make sure that he was okay. And that, you know, there were no complaints, or that complaints about him being there were never taken up to the higher level.
Yeah.
So,
won over some higher ranking men who were there, who would sort of excuse his presence and say, no, he's staying.
Yeah.
And then they would have to follow the orders. Now, you said that the messenger dogs had, you know, in this sort of training program, had to pass these grueling tests of desensitization to explosion, smoke, and the rest of what they would likely be exposed to. And then you said it wasn't clear whether they were running with the conscious effort to bring the message, or whether they were simply running for their lives.
Yeah.
And one of the things that just sort of broke my heart as I was reading it was that a lot of families donated their dogs.
Well, Little Jim was probably donated, the Pomeranian that held the speed record for message bearing in his sector.
Yeah.
Who would ever think that a little, basically a lap dog, would have the weight of so many men's lives on his back?
Yeah.
And the thing with, I mentioned the little terrier that was glimpsed running through a battlefield, tiny little dog carrying so much important material around its neck.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like I say, they were very brave. I also think they were scared.
Yeah.
I don't approve of the use of animals in war. I think it's a terrible thing. I think of our Freddy, even the thought of him being around all the guns and, you know, it's horrifying. But they did serve.
Yeah.
And that's why they need to be acknowledged. And that's why I picked out the few that I found that I felt really needed to be brought to the forefront along with Rags.
Yeah. Well, with my expertise is in dog training and behavior, and I can appreciate, and I've also had experience working in the service dog industry, and I know it takes an exceptional dog to be a good fit as a service dog. I mean, you know, performing tasks and being partnered with a person with disabilities that helps.
Yeah.
Mitigate the symptoms and the disability, right? Definition of a service dog. And it,
exactly.
And one of the challenges in this industry is that there's people who get a dog and say, this is my service dog, and the dog's really not up for it, and the dog suffers as a result.
Yeah.
I can only imagine the tiny percentage of these, you know, and you mentioned a couple. There's a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel given by his family. It was just too terrified to do anything, and unfortunately these dogs were often just shot as a result of it.
Yeah, Jilly Cooper tells the story of the little King Charles. It was just sitting there shaking, and they, rather than give it any more trouble, they shot it.
Yeah.
And they didn't tell the family. I mean, nobody knew what happened to their dog.
Ugh.
None of them ever came back. I'm working on a book now about the horses and army mules and donkeys that were left behind in Egypt.
Yeah.
After World War One. Because there were no processes in place for bringing them back to where they came from. Many of them came from the U.S. and Canada, Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a few came from the U.K. These were horses, equines, that were being forced to live and work in conditions that bore no resemblance to where they came from.
Right.
And when Mrs. Dorothy Brook, who started the charity that is the subject of my book, when she came to Egypt in 1930 and saw these horses being, at the ages of 30, 25 and 30, being worked to death in the streets, she said it was like seeing elderly veterans of war who no sooner had they helped win the war, but they were being put to work breaking rocks or pulling carts.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't do that to people. Why would we do that to to animals? And so, my heart breaks at the thought of what many of these dogs went through, and the very thought that Rags, who came from the streets of Paris, had the street smarts to survive it.
It's just amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, and not just the war itself, but then all of the events that took place afterwards.
Yeah.
So it's not clear how he was. So it's agreed upon by, you know, the accounts of in history that Rags was stray dog in Paris.
Yeah.
And it's not known exactly how he was, you know, whether he just befriended, followed some guys or was actually picked up and like, you're with me. But it sounds pretty consistently that Rags did what he wanted and that he clearly, especially once paired with Donovan, because Donovan wasn't the first person who got him from the streets of Paris. Isn't that right?
No, it actually, what I've found is evidence that Donovan and his fellow First Division member, George Hickman, were together when they discovered Rags, or when Rags found them at a cafe.
Okay.
Jack Rohan was a journalist by trade, and he worked for the Army Information Service. He was quite good about crossing all his T's and dotting his I's, using good material and, you know, sources for his assertions. But he had a tendency, like many journalists even today, to put some high color on certain scenes, and it seemed more dramatic, I think, to have Rags discovered in the middle of the night in the bar section of Paris by a single doughboy who stumbles into him and thinks he's a pile of rags. When in fact there are newspaper articles before Rohan's book ever came out that that mention that it did not happen at night, it happened during the day, and George Hickman was there with Donovan,
mm-hmm.
And that Rags basically followed them. That sounds more like it.
Especially based off of what it sounds like Rags did what he wanted.
I think he chose what he wanted to do. I mean, there's the account that when Donovan tried to take Rags away from the battlefield,
right,
just before the Battle of Soissons,
right,
when he clued in that this was no place for a little dog, he drove back on the signalman's motorcycle and was getting his stuff ready, and there was Rags,
yeah,
panting from having run all the way back.
Yeah.
So, I do assert this in the book. I think Rags chose. I think he chose.
Yeah.
Everything that happened to him. I think animals do choose. I don't think they're all victims of circumstances, though many times they are.
Yeah.
So my feeling is that the story probably was more a blend between the Rohan and the independent version that Hickman seems to have told people,
mm-hmm,
about. And since he was the only survivor, I tend to go with his account.
Right.
And we don't really know how old Rags was. He could have been older than 20 when he died.
It's just incredible.
Yeah.
So he was, he and not only did he, and this was something that he did on his own, he was kind of a wanderer, and he came across, I think it was a dead runner, as we were talking about,
yeah.
and saw the note and brought it back on his own.
Yeah.
He also was taught Donovan and Rags scouted and patched communication lines, and Rags
yeah.
learned how to tell the difference between broken and unbroken wire.
Yeah.
So he would help in those efforts.
Which was very helpful in the fog.
Yeah.
There was a lot of fog in those low, wet, horrible battlefield areas, and there was no way a pair of human eyes could detect whether a line was broken or unbroken. But Rags would run ahead of Donovan. So Rohan was told, would run ahead, and Donovan would hear him barking. He would go over to where he was, and he would be standing next to some broken wire.
Yeah.
He seemed to know that it wasn't right, and that Donovan should know
mm-hmm.
That he needed to be there.
Well, and I think that he learned what Donovan was looking for, and then,
yeah.
you know, of course, got reinforced when he let him know, and then Donovan, I'm sure, was like, "You're so awesome," and that was
yeah.
reinforcing.
And gave him his rations.
Yeah, right. So one of the things that I thought, and this comes throughout the book, is that, and we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll come back with some more about this really incredible story. That Rags did not appreciate the attempts of those who did not know him to try to teach him tricks. He felt
no,
he was above it.
No, he's on record several times, and down into the memory of people that Rohan actually talked to when
mm-hmm.
he was putting his book together.
Mm-hmm.
People who said he just wouldn't, he would turn up his nose and walk
no.
away.
Huh.
But he wanted to be given something to do, something constructive.
Yeah.
He was like a working farm dog or a herding dog. They don't want to be taught how to jump through a hoop or or, you know, roll around and play games. They want something really that they can focus on.
Yeah, he was like, don't insult me.
Exactly. And this may point to the fact that Rags may have had some Pyrenean shepherd in him. He looked a bit like he did. It's hard to tell what he was, but
mm-hmm.
One of my correspondents pointed out some of his Pyrenean shepherd characteristics, and certainly one of them is they're just laser-like focus. They
mm-hmm.
learn fast, and they are very precise in carrying out what they've been taught to do.
Yeah.
And that sounds like him.
It seemed like he very much took his job seriously. The one trick that he did learn was to salute.
Yeah.
And he was actually trained to do it. Donovan trained him to do it. When he saw soldiers salute, Rags would get up on his haunches and lift his paw up. And,
yeah.
you know, even over 10 years later, when he saw soldiers on parade, Rags would still lift his paw. Just as Donovan had trained him to do. And this ended up serving him when he really needed people to advocate for him or when he really needed to impress somebody. This actually ended up serving him. So we're gonna take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll be talking more with Grant Hayter Menzies and his book, From Stray Dog to World War I Hero, The Paris Terrier Who Joined the 1st Division. We'll talk a little bit more about... So Rags in World War during the war is the first part of his life, and then there's a whole lot more. So we'll be back in just a few minutes to talk more about that. You're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes.
I know I'd go from rags to riches.
Natural Pet Pantry is Seattle's original source for wholesome dog and cat meals, offering 8 different protein options to accommodate your pet's dietary needs. Made locally using all U.S.-sourced ingredients, their freshly ground stews, raw or cooked, can be purchased from their two stores in Burien and Kirkland, most independent pet supply stores, or delivered right to your door. Go to naturalpetpantry.com for more information. I'm Julie Forbes, and my first choice for my pet's food is the Natural Pet Pantry. It's the educated choice.
Next week on Conversations Live, Vicki talks with one of America's leading word nerds to learn some of the new words added to this year's dictionary. We'll also check back with Sue Aikens, whose Life on the Frozen Tundra is featured in National Geographic's Life Below Zero. And can you say cheese? We'll talk cheddar with cheesemonger and author Gordon Edgar. Tune in every Monday at noon Pacific time here on Alternative Talk 1150 and catch podcasts at conversationslive.net.
Your dog didn't hate going to the vet. Wish you were welcomed by a team who cared? Jet City Animal Clinic is an enjoyable respite from the same old thing. Dr. Anderson and her team have created a full-service facility that combines veterinary expertise with a comfortable style. Jet City Animal Clinic is located in Seattle's Capitol Hill neighborhood on 12th Avenue across from Seattle U. Bring your crazy questions, odd ideas, and alternative thinking. Jet City Animal Clinic will work with you to keep your furry family members healthy and happy. Traditionally educated with an open mind, call us at 206-329-0253 or email info@jetcityanimalclinic.com to make an appointment. Jet City Animal Clinic, a unique approach to the health care of your urban pet, a local family practice. JetCityAnimalClinic.com.
Time for something different. Time for Alternative Talk 1150.
Must I forever be a beggar? Whose golden dreams will not come true? Or will I go from rag to riches? My fate is up to you.
Nicely done, Eric. Nicely done. Eric always finds the perfect song that somehow...
Sounds like rags went from rags to riches.
And the fate and everything.
Today.
Well, we're back talking with author Grant Hayter Menzies, who's the author of From Stray Dog to World War One Hero, The Paris Terrier Who Joined the First Division, and it's the story of Rags. An incredible story. Layers and layers of miracles, and I mean, it's just, I can't even imagine how this all happened. So we were talking in the first part of this show about Rags and Sergeant Donovan, his partner's work, you know, in the war, and how Rags would find runners who had been killed or wounded and would take their notes that were very important to the efforts, and deliver them, you know, complete the delivery that didn't happen. And this was important. This was one of the ways that they were able to communicate. He was trained how to find broken communication lines and all sorts of stuff. And it's really just incredible that they survived in the first place, that he survived in the first place. And then it goes through the story of how he and Donovan both, you know, sort of at the same time were injured and exposed to, you know, gases, and Donovan more so than Rags. And then that sort of took them out together. And then this, like, middle part, which is really just sort of gripping to read, and how Donovan gets transferred from this place to this place. And for a while, everybody knows Rags and Donovan, and Rags is sort of viewed as part of the first division, just like any other man was, and their partnership was honored, and they were kept together. Rags was very clear that he wanted to stay with Donovan, and he, you know, showed that, and people would recognize that, and then they would get moved to another hospital. And then it seemed like as those moves continued, because Donovan was in pretty bad shape, it sounds like his lungs were basically destroyed from his exposure. It became harder and harder, and then eventually, like at the port, where he's about to get on the ship, right? Where they're like, no.
Yeah.
And then somebody who knows the story sort of steps up and smuggles Rags on the boat. Then he has to be quiet. I mean, it's just like, you know, in a bag underneath, you know, a cot, and then he's got to remain quiet. And this is like a boat ride from Europe to the U.S., so that's not a two-hour ride.
No, no.
And then, you know, and it's like, and then, oh, and then this. And then he's got to get on a train, and then he's smuggled, and da da, and like several times we go through this, like, and if he had been caught, if he had been discovered, he would have been taken and probably destroyed. Yeah. So
he would have been destroyed on the ship because the medical officers made regular sweeps to see if anyone had brought a pet. And the heartbreaking thing is that many of these wounded men were, you know, they needed their animal friend. And as part of their healing, it wasn't understood in 1918, but...
Right.
And if the animal was found, it would be chloroformed and thrown overboard.
Just devastating.
And that's what would have happened to him.
Yeah.
If anyone who didn't know the story had heard him scratching at the door or barking, that would have been it for him, and we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Right.
But somehow they got him across. And this came out in an issue of Stars and Stripes in the 1940s, naming some of the officers who were involved. Rohan was very discreet about this and not wanting to, I guess, maybe he didn't have permission to use some of the names. He never mentions General Pershing, for example, though he describes every last detail of him.
Mm-hmm.
Halsted Dory was, I think, had passed away by that time. And so the Stars and Stripes article mentions him and says he was the one that masterminded the whole thing. But there was what they called a rags committee.
Right.
And I think it included a nurse as well. It must have. And they somehow got him by hiding him under coats, hiding him in bags. They got him off, you know, on the ship, across the ocean, off the ship, on a train to Fort Sheridan, and then left him there with the wounded Donovan, and then he was in danger of being kept, you know, being homeless again. I mean, they wouldn't let him in the hospital until two people who happened to have heard the story let him in, and so he was as much protected by human memory and that his exploits had been passed around back to so many people as he was by his own, you know, his own efforts. Animals need us. And I think this is the prime example of it. Because even a lucky dog like Rags wouldn't have made it without people helping out.
Yeah. Well, he was on the ship, brought to visit Donovan.
Yes.
You know, how they even got away with that, I have no idea.
I have no, it just makes me shudder to think about it, because there were other people in the ward who not everybody would have known.
Right.
And what if he had barked, you know? It's just, but Halsted Dory brought him down from his stateroom, or his cabin, under his coat, and would bend over Donovan's bed, in to all appearances having a talk about old times, and in fact Donovan was petting Rags. You know, it was just amazing.
Don't you wish that you could interview Donovan and be like, what was it like? I mean, getting in his world of it, where he's extremely compromised, and you know, being transported from here to, and this dog just keeps showing up.
I know. And
I mean,
somehow,
he must have been like, am I dead? Or like, you know, what's going on?
Well, he apparently was aware enough to tell the nurses just to, you know, there were ways to shush Rags and calm him down when he got excited.
Yeah.
And the dog learned, as all smart doggies do, to do one thing really well, you know, when he's told enough times and he stayed under the bed or caught or whatever it was, under the seat on the train, and he just stayed there quietly. He knew that he had to. And I don't know how much of his street background contributed to that, or just knowing, you know, when to lie low. But if he had survived the streets in a relatively rough part of Paris, at a time when there was famine, then I think he could probably survive just about anything.
Yeah, I mean, it did seem like he had some awareness of what was going on, and this was sort of, you know, shown throughout the story and in lots of different ways. He kind of knew. Oh, there was one part where you said earlier on that he learned he would growl at anybody in a German military uniform.
Yes, he seems to recognize the differences between uniforms, and he would growl and snap at at the German prisoners. But he also would growl and be very standoffish toward civilians. Mm-hmm. He loved men in uniform.
Yeah.
That was somebody he could trust. And when reporters came to visit the Hardenberg family, when Rags was rediscovered in the 1920s, he didn't want anything to do with them. But
yeah,
had they come walking in wearing uniforms, it might have been better, might have had a better reception.
Yeah, he may have saluted.
He may.
Yeah.
Yeah, he remembered that apparently till the end of his life. And it touched, I mean, these things are usually not imaginary or contrived. There were too many officers who saw these things. One of them was General Summerall, who was one of the big shots of the American forces in the Great War, and who met Rags years later at Fort Hamilton and on Governor's Island as well in New York. And Rags ran up to him as if he had just seen him the day before.
Mm.
These are the voices who spoke out in confirmation of Rags, of his legacy, really.
Mm.
And I felt that was good enough.
I thought it was interesting as you talked about the end of his and Donovan's time together, as Donovan ended up losing his fight. You wrote, Donovan's case was not one about which any medical professional could hold any naive hopes. His lungs were destroyed.
Yeah.
This was 1920. Lung transplants were over 40 years in the future, and penicillin was not discovered until 1928. Having Rags beside his cot every day and evening had brought Donovan something approximating health, if a happy heart could override damaged tissue struggling to take in air. But if in the last weeks Donovan had reached a sort of bright zenith of mind over matter, after the high point came the descent. He could not fight anymore, sleeping almost all the time. Rags was often seen standing at Donovan's cot, looking at his motionless figure. And then after his passing, it was just so sweet to hear about how everybody, you know, thankfully really got to understand and respect the relationship and Rags and all
Colonel,
that.
Colonel Bipson, who was the medical officer for Fort Sheridan, was really a miracle to have him there.
Mm-hmm.
He loved dogs. He was a sensitive, very democratic, fair commander, and his men loved him. And he's the one who had the first collar made for Rags.
Mm-hmm.
To give his name and his information about his war service. When the news reached him that Rags was pining away, basically, he was not eating, because of Donovan's descent. Donovan was dying.
Yeah.
He made up his mind to go over to the firehouse at Fort Sheridan, which is still standing, by the way, where Rags lived at the time, and to bring the dog over to see Donovan one last time. And unfortunately, Donovan died that night.
Yeah.
And so he came over to the firehouse, unfortunately, to give the news that that Donovan actually was dead, and didn't know what to do. As many deeply compassionate people, sometimes they're at a loss, you know.
Yeah.
And so one of the young men, one of the young firemen, soldier, who had grown up with dogs out in the West, said he knew what to do. And so he carried Rags with the colonel to the infirmary and put him on Donovan's empty bed.
Mm-hmm.
And left him there for a while.
And the sheets hadn't been changed.
No, no.
Yeah.
And so that's all Rags needed to know. And mm-hmm. the interesting thing is he seemed to recover. It took him about a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then he seemed to recover. But he never would go near the hospital again, which
yeah.
is very telling.
Yeah.
I've seen this with animals, with dogs before. They don't forget these things. And I feel like some of the episodes that Rohan describes, which seem to come from interviews with soldiers at the different forts, or the different postings where Rags was, of Rags wandering the grounds at night, it seems like, I don't know, it sounds like Rags was still looking for Donovan.
Mm.
And that's something they do too.
Yeah.
Of course, we know.
Well,
so, yeah.
Yeah, there's clearly just an incredibly powerful bond between the two. And,
yeah.
you know, over and over and over and over and over again, there's all
yeah.
of these examples that's just
yeah.
Incredible. And then this, you know, at this point, Rags is like 4 because he.
Yeah.
lived to be 20. And so he's
yeah.
got a whole nother
life ahead of him.
16 years of
yeah.
life. And you go on in this, you know, next part of the book, really, you know, then talking about, well, you know, what happens from there. And,
yes,
you know, he goes and lives with a family. And, you know, you just go through all of this stuff. And
yeah.
it's just incredible.
And when he chose that family, he fell in love with the two young daughters of Major Raymond Hardenberg, who had served on the staff of General Pershing, and who knows, may have been in the vicinity of Rags at some point in France. And Major Hardenberg believed that Rags actually belonged to Fort Sheridan, and then the fort voted to give Rags to him and his daughters to take care of.
Mm.
They still thought, well, but he belongs to the entire 1st Division.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that General Hugh Drum pointed out in some newspaper articles in later years, that Rags actually belonged not just to the 1st Division, but to the American people.
Yeah.
He belonged to America. Mm. And but he was really close to those daughters, especially to Sue Hardenberg. They had a special thing. There are some photos that the Hardenberg descendants allowed me to use in the book,
mm-hmm.
showing Sue with Rags on a sled in the snow. And there were many other pictures I wasn't able to use because of space constraints of the two. And he was a little roly-poly. Cute little dog. You know, he was a war hero, and yet he was this fluffy little friend that the constant companion of these girls, and especially of Sue. And this is the interesting thing, that the Hardenberg descendants, who are still living in Maryland, where Rags is buried, they have a corner in their home that is devoted to Rags. That has photos things framed. His collar tag, which I feature in the book, is there as well.
Wow.
And it's all dented and scratched from all of his adventures.
I bet.
And and then, of course, visiting his grave, which is not far, it's a short drive from their house.
Yeah.
At Aspen Hill Memorial Park. They go to visit his grave regularly and leave flowers.
Oh, it's very sweet.
And this is a dog that died in 1936.
Yeah.
They never met him.
Yeah.
But they knew people who did love him.
Yeah.
And they also view him as, you know, not just their little hero, but as a war hero.
Well, one of the questions that I had was I was curious if Rags showed any signs of PTSD from all of the stuff that he witnessed. And you wrote only in his elder years when the comparatively tiny explosions of flash photography would startle him into confusion did Rags appear to have lost the iron nerves imputed to him during the violent battles he took part in through the last 3 months of the war.
Yeah,
but otherwise, it didn't really sound like he suffered from, you know, the doggy equivalent of a PTSD.
No. Well, of course, he had physical injuries.
Uh-huh.
He was on his right side. That seems to be the side that took the mortar shell blast that felled him and Donovan in October 1918. His right ear was torn. His right eye was blinded. And his right ear was also deaf, and then his right paw was injured, and so he went around limping, half blind and half deaf, so he had certainly those marks of his service. It's heartbreaking to think of flash photography reminding him of, you know, blasts and things. It's and people laughing. They didn't understand then that, you know, what that meant to the dog. I don't smile when I read it, I can tell you.
Yeah, that. I know.
It's something that people would have understood.
Yeah. But we're gonna take a quick break before we come to the end, but we'll come back and we'll just sort of wrap up with Grant about his book, From Stray Dog to World War One Hero, and then I have an announcement as well. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. The Natural Pet Pantry is Seattle's original source for wholesome dog and cat meals, offering 8 different protein options to accommodate your pet's dietary needs. Made locally using all U.S.-sourced ingredients, their freshly ground stews, raw or cooked, can be purchased from their 2 stores in Burien and Kirkland, most independent pet supply stores, or delivered right to your door. Go to naturalpetpantry.com for more information. I'm Julie Forbes, and my first choice for my pet's food is the Natural Pet Pantry. It's the educated choice.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Designing Health, makers of Missing Link, we cover the world of animals. This week, December 13th, it's a Best Sunday with Dr. Nels Rasmussen, and we'll have open phone lines. Dr. Nels can help with emotional, behavioral, or physical problems. He can test for allergies, drug, or supplement compatibility and dosages for you or your animal friends. Call us for a free remote session. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
This is Julie Forbes, dog training, behavior, and nutrition specialist and owner of Sensitive Dog, thoughtful guidance for you and your dog. If your dog needs basic obedience training, a behavior evaluation, or food consultation, I can help you. Call me at 206-372-7399 or visit my website, www.sensitivedog.com. I teach group obedience classes, in-home lessons, and evaluations, and a 2-week intensive training program called Higher Education. Again, I'm Julie Forbes, Seattle's dog behavior training and nutrition specialist, www.sensitivedog.com.
Outside the box, outside the norm, inside your radio. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Welcome back to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. We're just wrapping up a wonderful conversation with Grant Hayter Menzies, the author of a book titled From Stray Dog to World War One Hero, the Paris Terrier Who Joined the First Division. It's the story, the incredible story of the little terrier mix Rags, who started off as a stray in Paris and ended up truly a World War One hero. And it's just incredible. Grant, you did such a wonderful job bringing this story to life and sharing all of the information and all of the layers to it. I really recommend this book. It's a very interesting read. It's very gripping. It's really keeps your attention, and you'll definitely learn a lot, not just about Rags' story, but about this part of history as well. And then I also just wanted to let people know, now Grant, you're up in BC, is that right? British Columbia?
Yeah, yes. I'm an American citizen, but I live in Canada.
All right. Well, this is not out of your range then, because it's down here and we're not too far away.
No, no.
But the one of my favorite events every year here is the Vashon Sheepdog Classic, and it's a few days on Vashon Island just west of Seattle, and it's a herding trial, mostly border collies, and it's just a beautiful event all weekend long. Local vendors, artisans, demonstrations about wool and all sorts of great stuff. And I just wanted to let people know that it's a bit earlier this year than it has been the past few years. So just to mark your calendar, because time flies, June 9th through the 12th this year, 2016, June 9th through the 12th, the Vashon Sheepdog Classic will be held at Misty Isle Farms. I'll be talking more about that as we get closer to the event. It's usually mid to late September, so I just kind of wanted to throw that out there. Grant, thank you for your time today, and especially for the time that you put into writing this book. I very much enjoyed it. I highly recommend it. Go to Amazon.com and order the book, From Stray Dog to World War One Hero. You can also order it through your bookseller. Grant, thanks so much again for being with us today.
Thank you, Julie. And there's just one more thing I'd like to say. With each purchase of the book, a donation will go to NowZad Dogs, which is a nonprofit organization that reunites soldiers with the stray dogs and cats they took in during combat in Afghanistan and throughout the Middle East.
That's great. All right. Thank you so much. Yet another reason to purchase the book. We'll be back next Wednesday live from 2 to 3 p.m. Thanks for listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes.